Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, prominent writers and game designers discuss crafting game narrative and representation within gaming communities. Featured panelists are Keith Amon, Derek Tyler Attico, Keisha Howard, Carly A. Kosarek, and Samantha Ortiz. This episode is presented in conjunction with our special exhibit, Level Up, Writers and Gamers, on display now through May 2025 at the American Writers Museum. The following conversation originally took place May 19th, 2024, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Hello, and welcome to this program of the American Writers Festival. Our next program highlights an often overlooked type of writing, writing game narratives. In the American Writers Museum's exhibit, Level Up, Writers and Gamers, we spotlight the way writers influence game development and how those games affect our history, culture, and daily lives. Here to discuss crafting games and representation in gaming communities are an outstanding group of writers and gamers. First, we have Derek Attico, who's a science fiction author, essayist, and photographer. He won the Excellence in Playwriting Award from the Dramatists Guild of America. Keisha Howard is best known as the creator of Sugar Gamers and the world's longest-running gaming and tech community geared toward inclusivity. Keith Amon is the award-winning author of several books of advice for D&D plays, including most recently, How to Defend Your Lair, and has written the blog Monsters Know What They're Doing since 2016. Samantha Ortiz is a writer and narrative designer at Bad Robot Games. This panel discussion is moderated by Dr. Carly Kosarek, a cultural historian specializing in the study of new media technologies and video gaming. Welcome, you all.
Thanks for having us. So for the panel, I just wanted to start with kind of a broad question, because as Sonal said, this is an area of writing that I think is often overlooked or that people don't think about, right? And so if you were just going to say broadly, like, where do games and writing intersect, or what's the relationship between games and writing? Like, how would you describe that, or how would you explain that?
As a kid, I was an avid book reader. Like, that was my escapism. That was, like, my me time. That was everything to me. That's how I learned. And that was in the 80s, right, when I first started developing those formative experiences. So when video games were, you know, first came out for me, and I experienced that immersion between play and visuals and storytelling, that really sort of expanded how I thought about my identity even, or, you know, just what could exist, the possibilities that were out there. So that's what gaming and writing really mean. It was absolutely a formative experience.
I think for me, it was playing role-playing games. And when I first started playing role-playing games, I said to myself, well, not only do I want to play, I want to learn how to construct that. And to do that, you have to write, of course. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah, in role-playing gaming, I mean, I think everyone who gets into that hobby gets into it because they want to be the authors of their own stories. They want to create characters and tell the stories of those characters. They want to create settings and environments and worlds if they're the game masters, and they want to populate that with people and creatures which have their own stories and that the player characters will interact with. And so it's all storytelling, top to bottom. And when you start publishing things for people outside your own group, then, you know, then you're writing it down, because that's how you transmit that knowledge.
Yeah, everyone said it really well, but yeah, just all games have story. All games, the games that you don't think have story because they're very mechanic heavy, there's a story behind it. Everything has lore. And the more that you work with it and break it down, it's really rewarding.
A couple of you talked a little bit about role-playing games and kind of how important those are for kind of thinking about games and writing. Can you talk a little bit about the kinds of writing or the kinds of creativity that players experience in role-playing games?
Well, yeah, I think for players, what they get to experience is their own narrative if you allow them. I think the mistake sometimes that we as writers make is that we just want to write our story and make it so close-ended that we don't allow the player to contribute. And that's huge, because the player has to contribute. If they don't contribute, they don't have fun. So by allowing the player to contribute and create their own narrative, then they get to continue the story. All we're doing is passing it to them. We're passing the narrative baton to them. And in doing so, then they get to finish writing and writing the story to their to its completion.
The term of art is player agency.
Exactly.
So the player has to feel like they are an active participant in the story and not just, you know, playing a bit part in the game master's narrative. But one thing Derek didn't mention is also the element of writing backstory, deciding where your player character came from and what put them on the path that they are on at the start of your RPG campaign. And some players get very deeply into that. Even though, you know, the exercise of role-playing gaming is primarily about the story that you are all writing together, a lot of players just really are very motivated to tell the entire story of how their character came to that point, and that informs the choices that they make going forward.
Something that I think is pretty distinct to, so when we think about novels, right, they're written by like a person usually, but if you think about games, or even if you think about television or film, these are often written in teams, so you're talking about a much more collaborative kind of approach to writing. Can you talk a little bit, and this might be a good Samantha question, how does collaboration play into how games get written? How do teams build and work together?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I've had experience in indie game development, and now in like a double A studio. We have like, I think, over 60 people now, which is much bigger than I've ever worked with before. And yeah, working in a team, we have writers. I've been a writer, but I'm currently a narrative designer. So I collaborate with the writers and we figure out, okay, this is a story we want to tell, but this is the game we're going to make. These are the mechanics that we're going to have. And with these game design aspects, like how do we make those, how do we blend them together? Because like in fiction writing, for example, I can write a story from beginning to end and I guide the reader the whole way through, right? If I want my character to walk into a room, look to the right and see the book on the shelf and pull that book, they do that exactly when I want them to. And in a game, a player can not go into the room at all. They can go in, they can go left. They can go look at the lamp on the table before they even touch the book. They can miss the book entirely. So it's really a cross-discipline collaboration of trying to figure out the game that best suits players that love story, love narrative, and also want to just run and play the game and enjoy the mechanics and still get an overall story that fits what we want to tell.
And I can also say that for the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game, the Shackleton Expanse book, we created a writing room, that's with Modiphius, and we created a writing room where we broke the story from beginning to end throughout the book. And it was like four or five of us. And we created a narrative that went throughout the entire book. And we did that so that players can take this story and go from beginning to end throughout it. And, you know, to do that, it's just like what you do with video games. It's the same thing. So it's not just individual campaigns, but it's an overall larger story.
Something I teach, and I teach in a game design program, and I see some people the age of my students and younger here, and I know that their parents always ask me a very important question when they show up to tour campus, which is, are there any jobs, right? And obviously, I am on a panel right now with several people who are employed. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the different roles, right? Because there's a lot of different, you all do very different kinds of work and have done different kinds of work in the past. So if someone's someone that is very talented or interested in writing or narrative, what are the kinds of roles that they can look for in the industry?
I mean, at this point, I hate when all the conversations turn this way, when we have to talk about the AI in the room. But really distinguishing yourself in having critical thinking skills and problem solving skills and understanding conceptually how something works before you just kind of settle on an answer, those sorts of things are really important right now. Research is going to be incredibly important. So right now, it's about being familiar enough with AI to understand like what jobs it's taking and what is going to distinguish your writing style and how you connect with community, how you connect with players in play, that's really going to make a difference. So, you know, I would stay there because right now, in real time, we're losing so many different job titles in the video game industry. So moving forward, there are going to be new ones, and those new ones are probably going to incorporate some experience about like how AI writes, so and how it writes video games that players like, and how we use that data, and so on and so forth. So, but yeah, you have to ask me a nicer question next time.
You know, I'm full freelance right now, so I can't really talk about the state of different workplaces, but back in the day, I worked as a copy editor, and something Keisha said reminded me of what I consider to be one of the most important skills you can have as a copy editor. And it is not to know every rule about everything. It's to have that little alarm that goes off in your head that tells you, I don't know what the rule is here. I need to look this up in the resources that I have available to me and check. And that is one thing that AI doesn't have, and that is one thing that anyone working with AI is going to need to have. You gotta have that alarm in your head that tells you when something doesn't ring true.
Absolutely, and to amend that, AI tries to have style, but it really doesn't have an individual style. It plagiarizes, let's just be honest, that's what it does, it plagiarizes. So I would say cultivate and be confident in your individual style, because no matter what, it really cannot emulate that, it cannot copy that, and your individual style is what will get you hired.
Voice.
Your voice.
You gotta have voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And also something that's really important is that some people think that, oh, I love writing, I want to be in games as a writer, but there's so many different ways that you can be involved in story, in narrative, and follow multiple passions. For example, one of my coworkers is a narrative designer with me, and she has an art degree. She has experience with animation, so she works very closely as a narrative designer with our animation team. And it's really like interesting that she has that connection and that collaboration. I have a degree in computer science. I have a minor in creative writing. That was my passion. And I'm, as a narrative designer, I implement in Engine. I get to work with technical tools. And so we both have gotten to combine our two loves to still be in story, still be in writing, but also we find ourselves being really useful to the team in those ways of like expressing our like other skill sets. And I think that's really important to remember that you don't have to dive all in into like one aspect of your interest in your craft. You can always expand it.
Can you, just for people who aren't familiar, can you talk a little bit about what a narrative designer is, right?
Oh, like, boy.
If people, right, if people aren't in and around the games industry, like that's a very like industry-specific title, right?
Yeah, it sounds a lot cooler than it is. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, narrative designer, it's really different depending on what studio you work for, which is a little infuriating, but also a little exciting. So basically, if you are a narrative designer, but there are no writers in your team, you design the narrative and you write the narrative as well. And I have done that before. The job that I currently am at as a narrative designer, I collaborate with a bunch of different disciplines, game designers, combat designers, animation, art, concept art, all of the different teams. And I work in the narrative. I make sure that everything is massaged in and works and flows. I take art, I take narrative tools made by programming, I take mechanics, and I implement them all and kind of see it all come to life together, which is very fun and exciting. And I think it's like my favorite thing that I've ever gotten to do in my career.
That's awesome. So for all of you, to get us back to the actual focus of the panel, right? Like, what are some ways that kind of diversity of representation in games is meaningful or matters for players or even matters for developers?
Well, I think one of the primary and most obvious ways is voice, right? Because I can just, speaking for myself only, I know what I bring to the table is my unique voice. As a Black man writing for, let's just say, Star Trek, I bring a voice about what the 24th century looks like from a Black perspective. No one else can do that. You know, no one else can write Derek's perspective, Derek being a black man living in the 20th century, 21st century, and a black person, the black voice, I think is essential. I think we need people of color, we need diversity, we need people not only specifically for the future in science fiction, we need people of color writing and being in those rooms, speaking about what happens in the future, what happens in those rooms. I think that's essential.
I mean, I would say, like, especially in video games and in writing and just in the world we live in right now, everything's becoming very competitive. So having access to people who have these lived experiences and really valuing what that contributes an additional perspective where you can solve problems. That contributes to, you know, overall innovation. When we want something new and fresh, we look in spaces that we haven't utilized. Right now, you know, a lot of our content is kind of recycled, and a lot of us are craving for new stories, and those new stories are going to come from people that have diverse backgrounds and perspectives, people we haven't heard from before, people who we haven't, you know, historically allowed to solve problems in the way that they would. So I'm really excited about what that means moving forward and how, you know, everything will be impacted in how we write and what that will lead to. Because as you were saying earlier, having a style is really hard to emulate. You like the person. You have a human sort of connection with a person's style. And I'm really excited to see what people are going to do with writing, storytelling, and the tools that we have access to.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, I won't call out any names of particular games that have come out recently, but we've seen the reception of games that come out telling stories where the writers who told the stories weren't, or the writers, the stories that they're about, they're not in the room. You know, we've seen that. Stories from marginalized people that are just told by, you know, white writers that don't have those lived experiences. And it's just a necessity. A writer's room is a necessity. A diverse writer's room, having sensitivity readers is also something that's really important. Bringing them in every step of the way, consultants every step of the way. And I think that more and more developers are realizing that, yeah, these stories are needed, that they're missed, they're desired.
And to add on to that, at least with, you know, our current media and our current video games today, we have a lot of representation, but, you know, to your point, it's like those people who are represented are not in the room making decisions. So they're just like, we need representation. And that's only one part of, you know, this challenge. It's not just visually being represented, but really having your identity, your lived experience seen in some way from the community that you're in. So, and that's all very important. So if we don't have it from top down, from creator to, I guess, consumer, I hate the word consumer, but from creator to consumer, if we don't have that through line of everyone is here, everyone is welcome, everyone is, you know, can be a creator, is just really important right now.
And just from a storytelling's perspective, when you have diversity in those rooms, you tell a better story and you avoid stereotype, right?
I can tell you, going back to that little alarm I was talking about, if you have a room full of people who are my age and look like me, they might not have that little alarm that people who look like my co-panelists and are their age do have. And if you don't have that alarm in the room going off when it needs to be going off, you can subject yourself to a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah, nobody wants to be wrong in public, right? Just this is actually a tiny thing, but I've worked with and used sensitivity readers on projects, but I know it's something that not everyone's familiar with. Can you talk a little bit about what the role of a sensitivity reader is, what they do for projects, and for folks in here that are writers or game designers, why you might want to hire a sensitivity reader?
Well, say you want to write a game and you want to make it, you know, multicultural, universally, you know, compelling. You want to reach all the audiences, right? So you make your main character a woman or a person of color or a person from, you know, a different, you know, just a different background. But you are not that person. Do you have any friends that person? Do you know that person? And if you don't, you look out into the world and you're into the community of people who are in game design, who are in the communities that you're talking about, and you hire someone that is able to speak on that. And so then they can look at a narrative and be like, this is not accurate or representative of who you're trying to portray this character to be. And if you go forward like this, you're going to hurt people. And that's what a sensitivity reader does.
Yeah, it's really well said. And also something to keep in mind is that the sensitivity readers, there's also consultants. And a good difference between those is that, let's say you want to have that diverse character, but you don't even know where to start. Visually, you don't know about the background. You don't know like where you want to go. You just know that you want this person from this particular background to have this role in your game. You could bring on a consultant, someone from that background, very similar to a sensitivity reader. They could also be, and usually are also, sensitivity readers. And they come in and they help shape that from the ground up. So it's great because you have all these resources every step of the way. And honestly, there's really no excuse not to have, you know, someone there to help you craft that diverse story.
I mean, and even if you're just starting out, like the first games that we self-published, Axon Punk, was two white Texan Canadians and brothers, and they were just like, we want to make a hip-hop cyberpunk game. And I'm just like, okay, could you help us? And they really were, you know, open to the feedback. There was a lot of things that they wanted to pay homage to, which was really, really, you know, awesome to see. But there was a lot of things that were like either, you know, they needed more dimension. They needed more like, you know, actually being in the community. And part of how that happened was him like being able to do community events where he was able to play test his game, talk about his narrative, and talk to people about how they might fit into his story themselves from their own perspective. And it was a really, really amazing sort of way to like do this kind of work, be in community, and really like sort of deep dive into like what DEI is all about outside of your own identity even. So it was a really interesting experience, and the game was, you know, awesome. We won the Kickstarter, all the good stuff. So and we used a lot of those insights into our next game. We use a lot of those insights when we're doing consulting with other companies. So yeah, it's something that I'm doing regularly. And it's important just to have those people in your lives anyway. You should have a diverse friendship group. And, you know, maybe you've been working really hard and keeping your head down. But, like, in storytelling, everyone has a band of adventurers that are all different and diverse. So how do you get different and diverse adventurer friends? You have to kind of go out into the world and be in those spaces and talk to those people.
That's great. Like, and I think it's nice kind of to start thinking about what does it mean to have a diverse writer's room? But then also, even if you have that diverse room, there's no way you're going to have a writer's room that has every single kind of possible person in it, right? Like, there are so many dimensions of diversity. There's so many different kinds of people, and that's rich and amazing. But it also means, like, I don't think anyone's going to be, like, the expert on everyone, right? Something a couple of you have talked about, and I know a couple of you have really extensive experience with, is tabletop games, right? And so often when people think about games, they jump to video games because of the era we live in or whatever. But tabletop games have a really rich history and are really important for shaping designers. So you've got like designers like Richard Garriott, who did Ultima, or Brenda Romero, who worked on the Wizardry series and has won Game Designer of the Year and stuff, really actually start out as tabletop players and DMs, and that's how they learn to design. So can you talk a little bit about what tabletop games do for players and how they kind of help cultivate players into developers?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I think tabletop starts people off. You know, I don't know. It depends on the age, I guess. It depends on the culture. But I think tabletop is something that has never died. It may have started maybe, I guess, what, 70s, right? But I think tabletop is maybe having a resurgence. especially with the 2D20 system. But I think what tabletop does is that it allows people, especially now, an alternative to video games. And it's very expansive. It's also theater of the mind. Right, so you have something that you have as an alternative to video games. You can create as vast as your imagination, and you can just do whatever. You can do whatever you want within the realm of the whatever game rules and game sets. And it allows the players, it allows people to come together and sit around a table as opposed to being interfaced one-on-one in front of a screen. It allows players to just sit around, commune together, which is something which is very, very unique and very, I think we've gotten away from in the age of media and devices, you know. It allows people to commune together and play together and contribute their imagination together in a realm and in a campaign or whatever they're playing. I think that's unique. You know, I don't think that will ever die. I don't think that will ever go away. It doesn't matter the system. It doesn't matter, you know, what game you're playing. Just the idea of that is immortal in many ways.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known how to answer this question until I started listening to Derek. but what you said made me think of two things. The first is tabletop games give you permission.
Oh yeah.
They give you permission to take center stage even for a moment and tell a story. They give you permission to be creative and express your own ideas in a way that, you know, maybe playing Hades doesn't. Hades is an amazing game, but it's not going to provide a space in which somebody is going to tell a story of their own. At most, it will give them a space in which to tell their version of this story. So it gives you that permission to put your own stories out into the world. And then also, even for young people who are creative and want to tell their own stories, it's often a very solitary activity, writing in a journal, which you may never even share with anybody, but in a tabletop game, you are doing it in a social space.
Right.
It's a shared activity. You have an audience for everything that you are saying, and you're getting validation from that, and that's really important.
And you know what? You're right, because with video games, the story's being told to you, and in tabletops, you're telling stories to each other.
And now video games are blending. And both worlds are kind of colliding in an interesting way. You know, this is what kids are doing with Roblox. This is, you know, one of the games that I was working on was basically taking all that format of collaborative storytelling, putting you online with real human beings in real time, and being able to conceptualize the world in real time.
I was just going to say, what you're seeing up here right now is what tabletop games do.
Exactly.
Because we're all, like, having ideas activated by listening to one another.
Yeah, I think a lot about kind of the element of improvisation you get out of tabletop games, which I think can feel really scary, but it's also exciting, right? And hopefully this panel is not scary for anyone sitting up here,
but it
does have an element of improvisation, right? So if somebody's never played a tabletop game, but they're interested in kind of the narrative potential, what are some games you might recommend starting with? Because everyone knows D&D, but D&D is huge and hard to get started in, I personally feel like. So are there other games you'd recommend, or are there particular ways into D&D that are maybe less intense? Like,
oh my God.
Recommend your own projects. I don't care.
So as a consumer, I can tell you what my gateway drugs were. First, it was just the tabletop game books like Lone Wolf, where you just read a book and you're this character and you get to make decisions and you roll a dice. And you're just playing this by yourself, but I usually like read it to people and make them play it and make them like make the decisions in real time. And that was a lot of fun. I did that and with my older brother, and I realized what a bonding experience it is to just like have this theater of the mind out loud. Because as adults, it's, I don't know, almost shameful to like act for each other. And like now during this game, you do have permission to like be a different character, and it's socially acceptable because everybody else is this different character. So the solo books like Lone Wolf and Choose Your Own Adventure were really interesting things that I did with another person, even though it was a singular game, and my brother had all these voices. It was just a very interesting experience that when D&D came out, it was just like, all right, we got to incorporate my other brothers, and it really brought out a really interesting dynamic amongst us all. You learn so much being in these spaces with other human beings as they have theater of the mind together. It's a kind of an intimate experience, a bonding experience, a friendship building experience, and that's how I got into it.
And because of that fact, I think that the game is less important than the people.
The right game
to start with is whatever a group of people that you like and feel safe with are playing.
I will say, though, however, because I guess because I write for it, is that a lot of people are enjoying Star Trek Adventures, but what we find interesting is that there are people that have never watched Star Trek, and they're enjoying the books. And so because they're starting to enjoy the books and they're reading the books of Star Trek Adventures, then they're actually starting to watch the show. And it's a very, the Star Trek Adventures game is one that encourages cooperation, and it has adventures that you can just, there's no real heavy rule sets. It's just cooperative play, and people are liking that, and they're sticking with it, and I think that has them then watching the show. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, and I'm like you, D&D is very scary to me. I've never been able, I think I did like a Monster of the Week, like one thing. But anyway, but I have a lot of friends who are really into it. And I had a friend who, she showed me this one shot. It's like one shot is like something that can be played in one session. It's short, it's easy. And it was called A Quiet Year. And it was really beautiful. It was like me and three other people. And we just kind of recreated civilization using a set of rules that we determined for ourselves. And we played these characters in specific scenarios, but we were also like the gods, like we were the storytellers, like we were the DMs, but we were also the players. And it was really interesting and really exciting. And it made me a lot more interested in what these like one shots and campaigns can really do. But that's something that I would recommend for anyone who finds D&D to be like really vast and large is try one shots. They're really fun.
I was just saying, start small. Don't try and grab onto something huge. Just start small.
What are some of the skills? So like if someone's wanting to get started writing games, right? Or making games that are writing focused, what are some starting places or what are some skills? I think a lot of people have this tendency to be like, oh, someday I want to do this thing once I know everything. Like someday I'll write a novel after I'm a really good writer. Someday I'll make a game after I know all these mechanics. But like at some point you just have to start, right? So if you were just going to start, right? Like what would be a good skill building thing to do to like write something game-ish or game adjacent or to start making a game?
Well, I always say my go-to is Twine for writers. Twine is this really really basic tool that's very easy to use, uses HTML, and you can kind of do like branching storytelling. And when I first got started, like I said, I was a major in computer science, minor in creative writing, so I wrote fiction, right? But when I wanted to try to get into branching storytelling, I was really lost, right? I had no idea what to do. So I started joining game jams. I was very lucky to be involved in an incubator led by this company called Code Coven. But afterwards, just joining game jams, taking a theme, taking a prompt, and just writing a story from it. And when I encounter a scenario where the player makes a choice, give them another choice. You know, and I enter the story and then start branching from there. And then I always say, you know, you just gotta publish something bad. Like, you just have to make it, put it out in the world. You don't love it. You know it's missing some perfections that you don't know how to get to right now. And that's fine. You just gotta put it out there. Because I look at the games that I published 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, like cringe. Like, the writing is not where I would write it right now, but that's okay. I also look at it really lovingly, like, wow, look at what I was able to create way back when, and look what I'm able to create now. So you just got to do it.
I have to say, like, the skill that really helps people is understanding research. Because if we're going to go after it, I suggest going after it with a little fire in your heart, a little competitiveness and really know what you're up against. Like, research other writers who've done it well, appreciate the craft, appreciate the work in the space to craft these worlds for people that, you know, players will enjoy. I find that a lot of people, when they go down that route, they can really start distinguishing their own writing style and not only put out something bad, but keep doing it over and over and over again. Because if you are a gamer, you are or should be like expecting to lose until you're good. And that's how getting, you know, distinguished and whittling down works. So you keep having experiments, you do your research, and you really have you edit down what you want, because you're working in the gaming industry. And I would say for game writers particularly, they don't know exactly what they want to contribute. And there's so many ways that writers can for games, because we're writing for all different types of players and scenarios and outcomes. So like researching what has been done, understanding the tools currently and what they can do, and whittling it down to what it is that you're going to have fire to continue regardless.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, but don't get trapped and lost in your research, because a lot of people would just research forever. And right? We all know that. I started writing with a role-playing games. That's how I started writing. But start small. Do something, maybe a campaign or something for your friends. It's okay to fail. And then do it again. Rinse and repeat. You know, that's how you get good. You just keep going.
Learn from each cycle.
Exactly.
Keisha, something I wanted to ask you about, because you have run Sugar Gamers for so long, right? What are the changes you've seen in the industry in terms of diversity and representation, and how do you feel about kind of the future going forward from here?
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, I started Sugar Gamers during the 2008 recession, and now we're here, and like the world is changing a bit, and there's been a ton of layoffs and a ton of junior talent, a ton of diverse talent that's out there. They're ready to go. And I think that this is going to be a really exciting time to solve problems and create new stories in spite of what's going on. Because there's just so much talent available with needing something to contribute as artists, as creatives, and really getting back down to what community is. I'm very excited for that to begin, because people were working in their spaces and realizing how isolating it is. And how that, you know, in order to tell these stories, we do have to segment some outside time, some community time, to like understanding your human experience time, so we can continue telling stories that have that human element that we all connect with, especially in games. So I'm excited for what, you know, this means, even though, you know, the things that will come out of this will be coming out of a challenging time. I think that there are going to be some super cool collaborations and ideas.
Does anybody else have thoughts on that?
I mean, I agree. I think we're already seeing it. Some really amazing games coming from the indie spaces, that they're making their own stories, you know, they're making their own games, telling their own stories. And yeah, I think we're going to see some really interesting games with funky mechanics that will come up in the future. And yeah, a lot of people are also, you know, going in the route of forming their own studios. But forming their own studios, making sure not to repeat the same mistakes that the previous studios made that led to the layoffs and led to those unfortunate closures of studios as well. So yeah, I think it's exciting. It's really exciting. And I can feel the fire in the industry right now. Like, everyone, I had a lot of friends who went to GDC, which is a game developers conference in California, and they said, like, it's palpable. Like, the energy is palpable.
I was there in the courtyard where the people were screaming. So yeah, it was a really intense time, because we have such a cognitive dissonance right now within our collective game development community, because in real time we're having to deal with these adult things that are happening, these challenges that affect our everyday lives and comforts, and then this love that we have for this industry. Like, most of the people that I know that are in game development truly come from game development from a very pure space, from that space of play informative experience. Like, when I was a kid, this made me feel good. I want to make games that other people will enjoy playing and have this experience as well. That's how most people get in the industry. So we have this, like, wow, this industry is not loving us back. You know, like, this, we're working in a space that we want to love, though. We all got into this space thinking that it would be such a dream to work in games, mm-hmm. like to write games. Like, that's a dream job. And now we're kind of forced to face the reality of what it takes to, like, really make that the ethical dream job we want it to be.
I'm working on a tabletop now that I can't speak about, but it's blowing me away. I was like, oh, wow, I never thought that rule sets could be done this way. I never thought that the ideas could be done this way. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. So you're absolutely right.
I love secret projects. They always sound more exciting than NDA. Other projects.
NDA.
Right? It's like, whatever it is, it must be amazing because it's secret. Something I'm interested in, because we actually, just before the panel, we're realizing we all live in Chicago. And I think when people think about places that lots of games get made, they don't think of Chicago first, probably, right? But there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in Chicago. Can you talk a little bit about game development in Chicago?
I definitely can. I've been, like, in gaming since Midway Games, 2007, John Woo's Stranglehold is what I play tested on. I kind of remember Chicago during Midway era, like when Midway game, Mortal Kombat, the arcade era, and like what that meant for me, because we had arcades in the city, and I'm just old enough to remember good arcades. But anyways, Chicago's game community is ready. Like, we have so many great schools that have, like, game development programs, but the problem is our industry isn't here. So it's just time to, like, make one, because even the game studios in Chicago, like, do a lot of their work remotely, and their teams are all over, and they promote heavily and not necessarily regionally. They promote, like, on the coastal cities. Like, so we'll see their games at GDC. So we associate games coming from the West Coast and not Chicago. We're always having to be imported, you know, in. So I'm hoping that with the robust game community that actually is here and just needs to be consolidated, and we need to just, like, create our industry locally, I'm excited that we're starting to begin those steps. So just having seen this community over the last 15 years, so many more game developers are existing, so many more hungry writers, so many more new stories and new perspectives here, right, locally. I mean, you're seeing it yourself. So it's a really wonderful time to, like, be here, because, like, Chicago is kind of ripe for, you know, more game industry right now, like, with urgency. So
one thing that I think has been going on under a lot of people's radar is the number of tabletop actual play podcasts and streaming shows that come out of here. I'm thinking of James D'Amato's One Shot Podcast Network, which was recently handed off to Dylan Apelian. I'm thinking of Rivals of Waterdeep, which was recorded here, Tanya DePass and some friends of hers, before I think some of them moved away and they lost funding and some other things conspired to bring that one to an end. But there's quite a bit of that going on. It's the DIY thing, you know? People who can marshal the resources to do things for themselves are doing it. There's just not a lot of big publishing going on at the moment that I'm aware of.
Samantha, do you have any thoughts on that, since, you know, you're relatively new here?
Yeah, I moved here in 2022, so I'm starting to learn more about the games community. Kind of a lot of it got knocked down in, like, the indie spaces when COVID first hit. It shut down a lot of really great groups, but I'm starting to see the resurgence of those groups. They're coming back around. There's, like, Indie City. There's, like, a Discord for, like, indie game developers in Chicago, and they have meetups, and you can co-work with them, and it's no longer isolated and as alone as it maybe felt a couple years ago. And I work remotely. My studio is all across the world, and so you know, when I was looking for a place to live, I chose Chicago because I have a lot of wonderful friends here, but also the games community. I think when we first moved, there was like a meetup in the park for game developers, and it was so exciting. It was like 20 people or something, but so we're starting to see more of it. I think it's coming back, definitely. There are smaller studios here, but yeah, we're starting to form a really solid ground again. Like, I think we were knocked a little bit because I hear the stories from like the earlier years of how really lively it was getting and how like passionate it really was. And the passion's still there. It just went underground, but now it's coming back. And yeah, it's exciting. I'm still learning about it. Like, I'm learning about all these meetups and I'm like, oh, is that happening tonight? Okay, yeah, like I'll go to that. So yeah.
Well, like, I got our 5-minute warning, so we're at our last question. So I just wanted to ask, like, as we're closing, like, what is something about games and writing and like emerging projects that you're excited about right now? So maybe we can leave everyone with some stuff to be stoked about.
Well, I'm just excited about, well, first of all, I'm a transplant from New York. So I just got here also in 2022. So I'm excited to, learn more about the gaming community here. Gaming and writing community here. And I'm more of a speculative fiction, more than tabletop. I dabble, you know, I try and do cross-genre. So I'm really excited to get my feet wet, I guess I could say, and just do more work in that field and to see what it is like to do it here in Chicago. That's, for me, that's what I'm interested in.
So there's a particular newly released game that I'm kind of excited about. It's based on a role-playing game that's sort of a like a Greek myth engine called Aegon. It's like the idea is you're this old Greek hero doing Greek hero things, and a guy named Tim Denis took it and said, "What if this system, but a combination of like Survivor and Squid Game and Lost?" And it was all super corporate, and he calls it Deathmatch Island. And it's amazing. And one of the really interesting things about the storytelling in this game is that so much of it is done through this voice, which is a very, very kind of satirical corporate speak voice. And also the graphic design is pulling huge weight in how the game communicates what it's all about. And I have that. I'm really excited to play it. I think it's just a really ingenious combination of mechanics and concept.
Yeah, oh my God, like putting me on the spot, I'm trying to think about like what, I'm kind of in the same boat where I'm really excited to learn more about the Chicago gaming community and all the new games that are coming from it. And there are just some really, really cool people making really, really unique things with unique mechanics. Like, I had a friend who just had a gallery showing at Lille Street Art Center, and it was a phenomenal collaboration of games and physical hardware. And she had like Bitsy games. They're like little pixel games that you could play from a soft controller. It was like a plushy controller where like I don't know how she did it. And there was like a pillow that like sensed where you touched it. And it told a story of breathing in and out, meditation. And there's just a lot of really cool blends of physical and virtual that are happening in the space right now and in Chicago too. So keep your eye out for those. Like it's a blend because games are art, right? So there's a lot of blends of that happening around here. So yeah.
I was going to say one of the authors that is actually in the American Writers Museum now, Michael Pondsmith, he created the game Cyberpunk as a tabletop. And after Cyberpunk 2077, the video game, came out, it had to dry off a little bit. It had a lot of problems, so I didn't play it until 2 years after. And reluctantly, I got to say, that's been like the best game I've played to date so far. And I'm looking forward to their sequel. The reason why this game is so important is because I think it really simulates what it's like to live in an urban city complete with personalities, fashion, architecture, Like the simulation is really, really close, but it's still a one-player game, so you're not being bombarded with what it means to be online. So the storytelling has to be done in real time, and the storytelling in that game, the art in the game, the everything is really worth checking out if you're a video gamer. So I'm excited that the American Writers Museum is celebrating, because that also takes it from the tabletop medium to what it means to have that same sort of narrative in an expansive AAA video game.
Thank you so much. So thank you to our panelists. Thank you, American Writers Museum. And thank you all for coming out today. I hope you enjoy the rest of the festival.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.